Raise the flag.
Light the cauldron.
We declare the game's Odyssey open. Welcome to the Games Odyssey podcast, your home for stories of glory from the Olympics and Paralympics. I'm Jonathan Jordan.
And I'm Sarah Patton. We both love the Olympic and Paralympic Games, and we love history. But most of all, we love Olympic and Paralympic history.
From the epic and inspirational moments we all love, to the, well, the more bizarre and controversial moments, we're fascinated by it all.
Which is why we are on a journey through all of the Olympic and Paralympic Games, from the ancient Olympics held at Olympia, all the way to now.
All right, so here we are. We are in 1936. So I'm just going to go ahead and kick off this episode with a bit of a parental warning before we say anything else, Sarah, which...
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, so just throwing it out there just to kind of let everyone know, heads up, the next few episodes, including this one, there will be discussions of Nazism since we are in Germany in 1936. So again, if you listen to the show with kiddos and haven't had conversations about some of the things that happened in World War II and in Germany at this era of history, might be one to listen to later on with them or be ready for some discussions. But anyway, throwing that out there here on the front end, warning you. But after welcoming Germany back to the Olympics in 1928, the IOC awards the 1936 Olympic hosting duties to Germany in 1931. 2 years later, Adolf Hitler comes to power and the Nazis seize control of Germany. The resort town, Garmisch-Partenkirchen, is then selected to host the Winter Games leading up to the infamous Summer Games in Berlin 1936, injecting their politics into the Olympic movement. The fourth Olympiad would feature some old favorites from prior games, the addition of alpine skiing to the program, and a British conspiracy in the ice hockey tournament. Now, Sarah, I'll be completely upfront and say that I knew absolutely zilch about these Winter Games, including how to pronounce Garmisch-Partenkirchen until starting to do the research a couple months ago. So I always have to ask, what did you already know about these games?
They were a footnote in history that I knew that they existed because I've seen them listed before, but that's about it. I'm with you. I didn't know much. And to be completely honest, even though I had seen them listed, and again, I'm always outing ourselves as, or at least myself as being very self-centered as an American, but I don't know if I ever really thought about the fact that Germany in 1936 didn't only have the Berlin Summer Games, but they also hosted the Winter Games. Like, I saw the name, seems German, but I never really read about them. I probably stumbled across it in a book. I knew they existed. That's about all I got. So it's fascinating to me that we had two Olympics in Germany in that year.
And that's part of why I think these do get forgotten about, is because everyone talks about the Summer Games 1936. I mean, we're going to have two episodes dedicated to those games because so much happened. You just really can't fit it into just one. And yeah, these end up kind of getting overshadowed by those games because they were such a big deal. And I hate saying it that way, that they were a big deal, but historically speaking, they were a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think I implicitly knew that these Olympics had happened, but I had never looked into any of the details of them before. That being said, I have a feeling we're not the only people in the world who have overlooked these games. So how about you give us a little bit of some highlights?
Sure. Some highlights of the fourth Winter Olympiad at Garmisch, 1936. These games officially ran from February 6th to February 16th. These were the first Winter Games to feature alpine skiing events. In total, 646 athletes from 28 countries competed across 17 medal events, a substantial increase from Lake Placid. This was the first time a symbolic fire was lit for the Winter Games during the opening ceremony. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
It was also the first time fireworks were used at the Olympics during the closing ceremony on February 16th. The medals awarded at these games hold the record as the largest and heaviest Olympic medals. So if you've had a chance to hold one, let us know.
Yeah, I'll say I kind of want to know, like, how much heavier than
right
than the one that I have, you know, felt.
Yeah. This is the last time the Winter and Summer Olympics were hosted by the same country in the same year. And finally, due to World War II, this would be the last Winter Olympiad for 12 long years.
Okay, so on that note, can you imagine waiting 12 years for the Winter Olympics?
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah. we often refer back to Tokyo and Beijing, the 2020/21 and the 2022 Olympics. And
right.
I remember because of the COVID pandemic that the Tokyo Games were delayed a year. And that was catastrophic.
Yeah.
I mean, from the logistics, the fan perspective, that was pretty bad. But especially for the athletes. I mean, I know that there were some athletes that were peaking at the right time to be ready to go in 2020, and they just didn't make it in 2021. And so 1 year was bad enough. 12 years, I mean, that's just wild to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I came close to crying when I found out that they were going to be delayed. In fact, I remember at my previous job when everything started shutting down, we had not shut down yet. And I remember, you know, passing by someone's cubicle and them saying something about, like, well, next it's going to be the Olympics. And I stopped and I said, don't you dare speak those words. I did, like, straight up. And then it happened and it got delayed.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken.
It was the same way at my job that I was working at the time, as people were saying, it's going to happen. And I remember when the announcement was officially made, my phone blew up, my emails at work blew up with everyone knowing. But I mean, at the same time, even though we were sad as fans, I think we all agree it was the right call for being early on in the pandemic when you consider how long this thing has gone on. So it was hard, but I can only imagine how hard it was for a lot of the athletes.
And of course, you know, the whole reason that people had to wait 12 years is because you had a lot of really terrible, awful things happening in that 12 years. So, you know, we do have to keep that in context that, yes, as sad as it is to that the Olympics got canceled, the bigger tragedy, of course, was the loss of life. And I mean, just every kind of loss you can think of that was occurring during World War II. So, you know, we want to keep that in its proper context, obviously. So let's do this. We'll take a quick little break and then we're going to come back and give a little bit of background on how exactly these games did end up in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. Let's see how many times I can say it incorrectly. Okay. I love to run, but there's nothing that demotivates me from a morning run more than a bad night's sleep. That's one of many reasons why I bought a Layla mattress. Layla is an out-of-the-box copper-infused foam mattress that comes straight to your door and conforms to whatever position you sleep in while keeping your body nice and cool. Each mattress is designed with a firm side and a soft side, so you can pick your favorite. Or switch it up like we do. Plus, their pillows are the best, heads down. See what I did there? Click the link in our show notes to learn more about Layla, because when you sleep better, you feel better. All right, Sarah, I'm going to lead this off with a question I didn't put in the notes. And I know I've promised before never to do that, but it just kind of came to mind. So have you ever had, when you have conversations with people about the history of the Olympics, have you ever had the question come up about 1936? How could the IOC have possibly given the Olympics to the Nazis? Have you ever heard that comment? Yeah.
Yeah. Have you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've definitely heard it before, you know, both delivered to me and then just in other things that I've read, you know, people who don't dig into the background and the history of how it ended up. So here we are to explain how exactly that happened. So it can be out there and hopefully everyone understands the true story of how these games ended up happening. And also the Berlin games, of course, because there is an overlap with these background stories. Mm-hmm. So in 1931, which again is 2 years before the Nazis come to power, the IOC gathered in Barcelona to consider bids for the 1936 Olympic Games. And their focus was on the Summer Games at this point. Really, at the end of the day, they would focus on awarding the Summer Games, and then they kind of always dealt with the Winter Games after that. And I'll explain why in just a second. So, yeah. So here we are, it's 1931, and the IOC decided to award the Summer Games to Berlin. And then Germany chose to exercise the option in the Olympic Charter to also host the Winter Games. So that was a rule back then, was whoever was going to host the Summer Games, if they also wanted the Winter Games, then they got dibs, essentially. And Germany, once Berlin had been announced, they said, yes, please, we will gladly take the Winter Games as well. So there were some backup bids for those Winter Games in case Germany passed on their option. The backup bids were for Montreal, Canada, and also St. Moritz said, yes, please, we will take it again if Germany doesn't want it. So those were the two cities that were kind of waiting to find out if Germany would exercise their option. And then in May of 1933, the German Olympic Committee announced their selection of the ski resort town of Garmisch-Partenkirchen as host, since it already had a lot of facilities available to use. And we've seen that as a theme so far with Winter Games, is the town that has the most facilities available tends to be the one that's chosen. So they really just do that same thing when they pick Garmisch. It probably also had something to do with the convenient fact that Garmisch was home to the German National Socialist Party, aka the Nazi Party. So yeah, I have no doubt in my mind that factored into the decision as well. The games were organized by the German League of the Reich for Physical Exercise. That's a mouthful. Talk about a government agency for you with a name like that. And the president of the organizing committee was Karl Ritter von Holt. Now, when IOC president Henri de Bayet-Latour, who we've talked about before, when he was traveling to Garmisch for the games, it's reported that he was shocked by signs along the road that were announcing, and I'll give another warning here for parents out there, okay, before I actually say what the sign said, here's your warning to skip ahead if you need to, but he was shocked to see signs that read, "Dogs and Jews not allowed." Our IOC president, Henri, then met with Hitler about these signs, and he asked for them to be taken down. And it's reported that Hitler's response to him was, "Well, I thought it was customary that when a guest enters your home, they follow your rules." Henri, which props to him right now for what's about to happen, but Henri replied back to Hitler, "Look, when the flag of Olympia is flying over somewhere, we're the host, you're the guest." So after that, Hitler backed down and agreed to take down the signs. But, you know, this situation definitely highlights the tension that was happening between the IOC and the Nazis. So again, for anyone out there who you say, how could the IOC possibly have awarded the games to the Nazis? they didn't. And we see, you know, Henri here pushing back and saying, this is not right. You need to take these signs down, and seeing these problems that were coming up. So had you ever heard this story before?
No. And not to jump too far ahead of ourselves, I'm a little bit more familiar with kind of how Berlin unfolded and some of the key players there, including our buddy Avery Brundage. But again, we're not,
we'll get there.
So I'm just going to leave it at that. But I had not heard about this conversation before. I like Henri's mindset.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, I'm glad he pushed back, because I think, you know, given the fact that especially at this time, the IOC was very much like, oh, we're not political. We're not political. The fact that he was willing to say, no, we're the host right now. You're the guest, because it's our flag that's up. Like, that's, that was pretty bold on his part. Again, given the IOC's generally non-political stances on things. So, but anyway, that's kind of the background of how these games ended up in Garmisch. But yeah, take us away to the opening ceremony, the venues, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So like what would happen in Berlin just a few months later, the Nazis used the opening ceremony on February 6th as a piece of propaganda, trying to position themselves in a positive light. During the ceremony, organizing president Karl Ritter von Holt said, "We Germans want to show the world that we can put on an Olympic Games that will be a true festival of peace and sincere understanding among peoples." Sure, Karl. Sure.
Yeah, we'll see what history has to say about that.
And I mean, just as an aside, we know the Nazis excelled in propaganda, but again, we're not diving into everything about the Nazis, but that was definitely a strong point for them. In typical Winter Olympics fashion, bad weather plagued the opening ceremony, with a blinding snowstorm whipping through the stadium. Regardless, the games were then officially opened by none other than Chancellor Adolf Hitler.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess he's another, you know, there's been very few heads of state who have opened up more than one Olympic ceremony. And so Hitler makes that very rare selection of individuals who opened up too. Here he is. Yep. So. Now, you know, my question for you is more about, you know, knowing how the Nazis were with their propaganda and kind of seizing the opportunity with the Olympics. You know, what are your thoughts on, do you think the Nazis saw Garmisch as a dress rehearsal for Berlin?
Yeah, I think we could say that. I also feel like it was also kind of an experiment to see how much they could get away with and how much the IOC would really tolerate. So I mean, in some ways, yes, but we know that they were just ready to push as much as they could. What do you think?
I mean, I think in part it probably was, but at the same, there's also a part of me that says, yeah, but there were really only a few more months until the games, but then a lot can change in a few months. You can tweak and adjust a lot of things in 6 months. But yeah, there's a part of me that says, I do think a part of this was, hey, let's kind of, like you said, let's see how much we can get away with, and then we'll be ready for the big show with Berlin, because this is still so early on in the Winter Games history. Frankly, just not as many people overall paying attention to it like they would the Summer Games.
Yeah. And now that we're having this conversation, a thought that just came to my mind is, do you think that there's a part of it where Hitler was also kind of flirting to see how many countries like this, like how many countries like our hatred of the Jews, and thinking of the long game here of, see, like if I can convince this other country that we need to invade all these other countries that have high Jewish population, you know, I mean, I know there was just so much going on. But I also just wonder if he kind of saw it as an opportunity to see who might be his buddies,
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe we'll get into this a little bit more with Berlin. But initially, Hitler wasn't really a big fan of hosting the Olympics and was kind of dreading it because he had inherited it as essentially a problem. He had other things on his agenda, obviously. And it was really more his lackeys who said, no, this is a great opportunity for us to show the world how great we are and to kind of, you know, reduce some of the tension that people are feeling towards us. And then he became a fan of the idea later on. So again, we'll get into that in a little bit more detail in the next episode. But yeah, there is a part of me that still says this was kind of a little bit of testing the waters and seeing, okay, what do we need to adjust before, you know, everyone is watching us this summer. But anyway,
yeah,
a little bit of conjecture, but fairly safe conjecture, I think, given the results. So
yeah, no kidding.
Let's take another quick little break and then we will come back and chat about the events and the athletes. Okay. Recently, my son asked me, Dad, can we go to the Olympics in Paris? And I said, well, I guess that's one more thing I need to save up for. And because I've always been lousy at saving money, I use Acorns, a savings and investment app that has helped me save money without thinking about it. Every time I swipe my debit card, it rounds up to the next dollar and invests the change for me. And every week, it automatically drafts a set amount for my bank, so I don't forget. Plus, I get bonus earnings just by shopping online at places like Nike and Shop Disney. It's trusted by me and 7 million others, including Olympic gold medalist Kevin Durant. Click the link in our show notes and sign up today, because no matter what your savings goal is, Acorns can help you grow.
Okay, so when it comes to the events, we are going to kick things off with figure skating, with the women's figure skating to be exact. So, completing her personal golden trilogy, Sonja Henie won a third consecutive gold medal in 1936, three-peating her way into the history books. And of course, if you've listened to our other episodes, that name is familiar to you.
Yeah.
It's reported that she was a particular favorite of Hitler at the games, but that's not her fault. Right. She was a lot of people's favorite, including the judges, obviously. And I mean, I'm sure you know this and we'll talk about it, but Hitler tended to find various athletes to be his favorites. Right. So yeah, as we mentioned back in our St. Moritz episode, she retired after 1936 and became a professional performer, popular worldwide, but especially in the United States. Next, we're going to move on to pairs figure skating. Germany won the pairs competition thanks to skating partners Ernst Bayer and Maxi Herber. They started skating together 2 years before when she was only 13 years old. Ernst also won silver in the individual men's competition and had competed in the pairs event in Lake Placid 1932. As such, he is the only male figure skater to win a medal in both individual and pairs events, which
pretty braggable.
I'm not a skating expert, but that seems to be a pretty dang big deal.
Yeah.
The pair won 4 world championships together and were some of the earliest skaters to use shadow skating in their routine, which is where the two skaters performed the exact same moves without touching. They were the first pair in Olympic history to perform side-by-side jumps.
Also braggable.
Yeah. I mean, that's very common to see now. So they literally changed pair skating forever.
Yeah.
In October of 1940, they got married. He was 15 years older than her. So
less braggable.
Ew.
Yeah.
Just tossing that out there. Yeah. They had 3 children together and skated in ice reviews together after World War II and also ran a business. Unfortunately, they divorced in 1964, and Maxie found herself without a source of income, so she became dependent on social services to survive.
That's sad.
So sad. It's so sad.
Yeah.
And I know that that's not an uncommon thing for women in that era.
Yeah.
The very next year, Ernst remarried to Swedish figure skater Brigitta Winstrom, who was 30 years younger than him. So homeboy has a type.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Uh-huh. They had a daughter together and then divorced in 1973. He got married and divorced one more time after this too. Later in life, though, Ernst ended up back in Garmisch, where he passed away in 2001 at the age of 95. As Maxie aged, she suffered from Parkinson's and moved into a retirement home, also in Garmisch, where she passed away at the age of 86 in 2006. So, yeah, they definitely, from a skating perspective, have quite the legacy. But
yeah,
my heart definitely aches for her and everything that she went through. And this guy is probably not a guy.
He's a sleaze bag. He's a sleaze bag. We can just say it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a PG term.
That's PG as far as I'm concerned.
Good word. This is why you're the writer, because I was fishing for an appropriate word in my mind.
Yeah, but you know, it was interesting to me with this story that they both ended up back in Garmisch, because they weren't really from there, and both of them left, you know, after the Olympics. They left and they went off and did other things, and like you said, they, you know, started a business, they, you know, did all these other things in different places in the world, especially him. In fact, I'm pretty sure, I can't remember for sure, but I think he maybe even lived in the U.S. for a while. So it's just interesting that both of them late in life ended up back here in Garmisch, where they had one gold together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, just kind of strange how that worked out, I guess.
It almost makes you wonder if they were looking for some kind of closure or something. I don't know. That's all speculation, not anything that we have proof of. But it is fascinating.
Yeah, but I am sad that her story went as rough as it did, and that she didn't have a way to, you know, support herself after, you know, he dumped her, from the sound of it. So but let's go ahead then and chat a little bit about men's figure skating, where in the men's individual event, Karl Schäfer of Austria defended his Olympic gold. And it should also be noted, fun fact about Carl, that he was also a summer Olympian. This was something I had overlooked when we talked about him in Lake Placid. So back in Amsterdam, 1928, he actually came in fourth in the 200 meter breaststroke. So he just missed being a summer Olympic medalist as well, just off the podium.
So close. I know. That's so cool, though.
Yeah, so in the end, he ended up participating in five total Olympic Games, since he did both winter and summer. So that's really, really cool that he was in that many Olympic Games. Usually we only see like shooters with that kind of longevity and that many Olympic appearances. Now, he did also qualify for the 200 meter breaststroke for Berlin 1936, but while he was participating in the first ever Olympic torch relay, which we'll talk about in our next episode, he suffered from burns. And so he had to withdraw from the competition. So he did make it onto the team, but he was unable to even start because he was recovering from torch burns, apparently.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. But hey, he had his two figure skating gold medals to comfort him, I suppose.
Definitely a legend.
So after the games, he turned pro in figure skating the very next year, touring in the U.S. And then he also took up coaching over here in the U.S. Before moving back to his home country of Austria to coach there as well. So he stuck with the sport even after his competing days were over, which I always love hearing that. And then let's go ahead and slide on over to bobsled. So in 1936, we saw the addition of the two-man bobsled competition for the first time. And the U.S. ended up winning the first gold for that event, with the Swiss in silver, and the second U.S. team won bronze. And then in the four-man bobsled event, the Swiss ended up unseating the U.S., winning gold in a time of 5:19.85. And the second Swiss team came in second. So Swiss went 1-2, and then Great Britain won bronze. That's right. U.S. didn't even make the podium at all, with one team coming in fourth and the other one coming in sixth. Well, all good things come to an end, I guess. And then, you know, we mentioned back in the highlights that we had alpine skiing added at these games for the first time. And I don't know, honestly, there's a part of me that kind of feels like they should have already been in the games before this. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just because it's such a staple sport now that we're used to it. But I'm surprised it took as long as it did. Then again, I remember this is only the fourth Winter Olympiad. It's only the fourth.
Yeah.
But yes, I was surprised too.
Yeah. But no, same. I still feel like this should have been there from the very beginning, but it has been there for a long time. Anyway, so we've got the first alpine skiing events ever for the Winter Games, but not without some controversy.
Yikes.
So, yeah, here we go. So, under the amateur code at the time, the IOC declared that ski instructors were ineligible to compete because that qualified them as professionals. So, obviously, that wipes out a whole slew of people who probably normally would have been considered favorites. The Austrians and the Swiss in particular were not happy about this, and they just ended up boycotting the alpine events altogether. So they just didn't even enter in it, even though we know alpine skiing tradition goes back a long time for both of those countries. Now, there were a handful of Austrians, though, who did enter, but they decided to represent Germany instead. So there were a few who said yes to the boycott for Austria, but I really want to compete in the Olympics and I speak German, so here we go. And I'm sure Germany was happy to have them, given the events that would happen later on with Austria. Now, this is fun. Women were able to participate in alpine skiing right away, Sarah. So no delay for them in this event.
Yes, we love this. Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Germany's Crystal Krantz won gold in the combined event. And in her skiing career, she won 15 world championships, which has yet to be matched. So a legend in her own right in terms of skiing. So she was born in Brussels and her family fled to Germany during the First World War. And then she later, unfortunately, became the poster girl for the Bund Deutscher Mädchen, which is the Nazi organization for young girls. And then in 1943, she married a guy named Adolf Borchers, who was an ace pilot in the German military. After the war was over, the couple was arrested and they were sentenced to 11 months in a forced labor camp due to their collaboration with the Nazis. They ended up fleeing from there to the American occupation zone in Germany in 1947, and they opened up a skiing school that they ran there for four decades. And then for the 1956 and 1960 Winter Olympics, she served as the coach for the German national team. And then in 1960 and 1964, she served as an Olympic judge for skiing, which my question there is, since she was both a coach and a judge for 1960, was there any kind of conflict of interest there?
But there had to be.
Yeah, but I guess maybe if she was judging an event she didn't have an athlete in, maybe that's okay, but it's still questionable anyway.
Yeah.
I don't have all the details there of how that worked. But yeah, you know, she definitely has, I guess, kind of a mixed legacy, because she was a great skier, but then she was also a Nazi collaborator. So, and then over in the men's event for alpine skiing, it was won by a German as well, Franz Fanur. And as a reward, he was invited to have coffee with Hitler at Hitler's personal mountain retreat. During the war, Fëanor joined the SS, which is not great, obviously. He was then severely wounded in 1944, and he was close to dying for 15 months. So basically just for 15 months lying there, they kept expecting him to die. But he eventually survived and pulled out of his injuries. I don't know the details of what I'm about to share exactly, but he was never arraigned for his involvement in war crimes. So I'm not quite sure how he got out of that, considering he was a member of the SS and most of those guys were hunted down for the things that they did. But there
we have questions. But
yeah, so
it's for another time.
Right. So if someone out there knows how he was able to get away with that, I'd be interested to know. But for me, what I take away from this is we have to be careful about athlete worship, right? And we see this happen in American culture so much, someone is just glorified because of their athletic ability, and then things come out about them later on, or they make some really unwise personal choices, and then suddenly it's like, oh, I used to wear that guy's jersey, or whatever the case may be. And so it's just a reminder that sometimes there's stuff going on behind the scenes, and so we can we can enjoy the sports and we can enjoy watching the athletes, but we need to be cautious, especially, I think, I don't want to be too preachy here, but we need to be cautious, especially around our kids, about how we talk about certain athletes and how highly sometimes we lift them up. And remember, people are human, and legacy is a tough thing. Let's just say that
it is. I don't know. It's so hard to say the answer to this because on what I'm about to say, because I know that so many ordinary people that were not Olympic athletes were members of the SS and all that. But it makes me wonder if he was kind of persuaded by Hitler when he went to his mountain retreat. Like, I wonder if he still would have ended up in the SS. Like, there's a good chance of it, knowing what we know about Germany, but during this time. But yeah, I kind of wonder if Hitler saw an opportunity, like, let me schmooze him. He's going to be a person of influence, And and I know that, like, it was still kind of early on, but I don't know. I'm just kind of curious how some of these things came out and unfolded. And I think a lot of those secret conversations we'll never know the answer to. And it doesn't really change the course of history and the horrible things that were done. But it's certainly interesting to think about.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take another little break and then we'll come back and we will chat about cross-country skiing and some other fun stuff. My son wants to compete at the Olympics one day, so we're always encouraging him to eat his veggies, limit the sugar, and load up on protein, which is how we found out about Moink, the ethical meat subscription box. Every month, we get top-grade meats like beef, chicken, sausage, bacon, and salmon delivered right to our door. It's saved us literally hundreds, maybe thousands at this point, from what we used to spend at the grocery store, and the quality is amazing. Click the link in our show notes and try out Moink for yourself. Ethical meat, exceptional taste.
For 1936, a new discipline was added for cross-country skiing, the 4x10 kilometer relay race. In a very tight race, the Finnish team managed to beat out Norway by only 6 seconds, which that's about as close as it gets in cross-country skiing.
I'd say so.
Although I'm having flashbacks to Here Comes Diggins. That was that was an exception though. But yes.
It's still in it. Both of these situations are exceptions.
If you don't know what we're talking about, we just skipped ahead a lot of decades and I'm talking about 2018 and Jesse Diggins. And if you search on Google, Here Comes Diggins, it's one of those very notable sports calls. Anyway, back to cross-country skiing in 1936. The Swedes swept the podium in the 50-kilometer race, led by Ellis Wicklund, who was also an accomplished accordion player. After his Olympic career, he worked briefly as a coach, and then he opened a sporting goods store and also a ski wax factory.
What I want to know is whether once he was a coach, whether he played the accordion as motivation for his athletes.
That's what I want to know. Or like, did he coach anyone on the accordion? Things that we need answers to.
Yeah.
But clearly a man of many talents. And then moving on to speed skating. So speed skating was dominated by Norwegian star Ivar Ballingeren, who ended up with golds in the 500 meters, the 5,000 meter, and the 10,000 meter races. Oh, yeah. And he also got silver in the 1500 meter, which ended up being his seventh Olympic medal.
So he was kind of good at this.
Yeah, you could say that. That made him the most successful athlete of these games, not to mention one of the most successful speed skaters of all time. So yeah, he's decent. Yeah. In fact, the only other speed skater to match his seven medals is Klaus Thunberg, who we've previously discussed.
Yeah, remember good old Klaus.
Not to be confused with Klaus. Until it's around Christmas time, because that's what comes to my mind. Ballingeren was originally born as Ivar Eriksson on March 7th, 1904, but his father died when he was young, and when his mother remarried, she changed his surname so they would all match. During his career, he set five world records, three of them in the 5,000 meters. He attempted a comeback in St. Moritz, 1948, but it didn't quite work out. He operated a couple of sporting goods stores in Norway before passing on June 1st, 1969, at the age of 65. So I'm seeing this trend here of athletes opening sporting goods stores.
Yeah. They become coaches or they open up sporting goods stores. That's
I mean, they know their stuff. I can't blame them. Like, do what you know. This is before the age of becoming an influencer online. So
right. That was how they were an influencer. So it's like. Like, oh, you're Ivor? I am. And would you like to try this ski wax?
Works
that
for
has
me.
My face on it.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant.
All right, so we have to get into ice hockey because, let's face it, kind of like you said earlier, there's just a dark cloud over these games. And this is just one of those kind of moments where we get a little bit of fun mixed in. Maybe it wasn't fun at the time, but it's kind of fun now looking back. So I hinted earlier that we have a bit of a conspiracy happening in ice hockey here in 1936. So for the first time in Winter Olympic history, Sarah, someone other than Canada won gold. But how exactly?
Well, and as Americans, we love this, but also.
Yeah. Now sorry, that being Canada. Said, Canadians, we love you. We do.
Just because we're like the younger sibling that can never win.
Yeah. It's true.
And I say we do win now.
Yeah.
But
not always.
It's been a journey. It has been a very tumultuous journey. So anyway, we're just jealous. We own this.
No, for sure. So here at these games, Great Britain pulled off a stunning upset against Team Canada when Edgar Brinchley scored the winning goal with less than 90 seconds left in the game. Okay, so let's get into the conspiracy, though. So there was this guy named J.F. Bunny. That was a nickname, apparently, but J.F. Bunny Ahern. He was the general secretary of the British Ice Hockey Federation at the time. So he had a mole planted in the Canadian Amateur Hockey Association, whose job was to collect names of Canadian athletes who had been born in the British Isles. And so our guy Bunny here then used that list to bring over 8 players to Team GB before the Winter Games. Some shady recruitment tactics happening over here.
You could say that.
Yeah. It should be noted that the Canadians protested this scheme, but to no avail. At the end of the day, these 8 players had British passports, and had been born in Britain. And so therefore the IOC was like, I mean, if they decided they were going to play for Britain, that was kind of, at the end of the day, all that could be said about it. So, yeah. The German ice hockey team, we need to talk about this for a second, too, especially given the historical context of what was happening at the time in Germany. So the German ice hockey team did include one Jewish athlete, Rudy Ball. And he had also been a member of the bronze medal winning team for Germany back in 1932. So here's the deal. Rudy was not originally selected for the team because he was Jewish. Like, let's just get that out there. But star player Gustav Janicka said he would refuse to play in the Olympics if Ball was excluded. So basically he stuck up for his buddy and said, if you want me out on the ice, then Rudy's going to be there with me, and kind of, you know, again, stood up for mm-hmm. his friend, and it worked. So
I respect it.
Yeah, absolutely. So unlike what we'll see in the summer games, where there was one Jewish athlete for Germany for a very different reason, Rudy was the only Jewish athlete to represent Germany under the Nazi flag. So anyway, we're going to jump over to ski jump for a second. It was the final event of these games, and it saw a record crowd of 150,000 people in attendance, which is wild to me. That's so many people for ski jump. But
yeah, it's very impressive.
It is. Yeah, for sure. So the winner was a familiar name, Birger Ruud of Norway, who had also won gold back in Lake Placid, and Sven Eriksson of Sweden took silver. Now, a little bit more about Ruud. In 1943, he was imprisoned by the Nazis for speaking out against them. Sounds like he was rude to them, and I'm here for it because I'm certain that they deserved it. And then he was released in 1944, and then he promptly used his newfound freedom to join the Norwegian resistance for the remainder of the war. So I like this guy. He's cool.
Yeah.
And then he did return to the Olympics 12 years later in St. Moritz, 1948, where he would end up winning silver in ski jump to close out his Olympic career. So
good for him.
Yeah, I felt like we needed to end the events for this edition of the games with a positive story. So, yeah, we like this guy. We like Birger Ruud of Norway. We're fans. We need to get our Norway flags out and and fly them in his honor. So, but it is fun to kind of hear these stories, and you know, it's just, again, kind of setting the stage for some of the things we're going to be talking about, and just seeing how, you know, like we saw with World War One, so many athletes ended up, of course, being in the military or being involved in resistance movements. I mean, mm-hmm. it was just kind of, you know, when duty calls. And I mean, and I know this is going to date this episode down the road, but we've seen the same thing happening with the war in Ukraine.
Yep.
With Olympic athletes jumping in to, you know, defend their country. So,
I feel like we're beating, or especially for me, I keep beating a dead horse, but I feel like we have seen a lot of parallels. Mm-hmm. Maybe not to the same extent, thank goodness,
sure.
With Beijing in 2022, but then also Russia, and seeing that there's Russian Olympic athletes who have started recruiting young people to be part of like special Russian forces and stuff. It's very interesting to see some of the parallels. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and hear me out. I'm not over here saying that like World War III is happening, but just it's very interesting to look at and how history repeats itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we've kind of hinted at the legacy of these games a little bit already, but of course we need to discuss the medal table, because we haven't done that yet.
Yes.
So Yeah, so Sarah, what did that look like?
Yeah, the games closed on February 16th with Norway winning the most medals. No surprise. 16, including 7 gold.
Yeah.
Sweden won 7 medals with 2 golds. Host country Germany won 6 medals with 3 golds, and Finland won 6 medals with 1 gold. As we already touched on, the legacy of these games is that they get overshadowed by the 1936 Olympiad in Berlin later that year. But it shouldn't be overlooked how international tensions and suspicions of Germany were running high at this point, and how they were using the Winter Games as a primer for their propaganda efforts for the larger, more visible Summer Games.
So I'm glad that we covered these games, because obviously, even though there were some tough parts to some of the stories here, there were also a lot of great athlete stories that I had never heard before. So it kind of just felt like opening up a little treasure chest that I didn't know had been there. So if you enjoyed this episode,
and we really hope you did,
then make sure you come back next time when we head off to Berlin 1936, which is going to end up being a two-parter. So right now I'm thinking the first part is going to focus primarily on a lot of the backdrop of the games, like the threatened American boycott and some of the other things that were going on in Germany leading up to the Summer Games. And then the second part will probably focus mostly on the athletes and the events and legacy, all that good stuff. But until then, Odyssey you later.
The Games Odyssey podcast is a production of Wardrobe Media, LLC. This episode was written, hosted, produced, and edited by Jonathan Jordan and co-hosted by Sarah Patton. Show notes, including research sources and transcripts, can be found on our website, gamesodyssey.com. Olympic is a trademark of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, USOPC. Any use of Olympic in the Games Odyssey podcast is strictly for informational, commentary, and educational purposes. The Games Odyssey podcast is not an official podcast of the USOPC and is not sponsored, endorsed, or officially affiliated with the USOPC or the International Olympic Committee or International Paralympic Committee. The content of Games Odyssey podcast does not reflect the opinions, standards, views, or policies of the USOPC, and the USOPC in no way warrants that content featured in the Games Odyssey podcast is accurate.